project again. My name is Sarah Bieberstorf. I am from Wisconsin, and this project is through the Wisconsin Public Health Association and the Medical College of Wisconsin. The first thing I need to do is acknowledge that Teresa Duchateau was really the person who was listed in your program, and she was unable to be here today. She prepared the presentation. She has done the vast majority of the work day to day. If you have any questions after this, and that I can't answer, she'll be happy to respond. To that end, on the chair over there, there's some handouts that include a description of the resources that I'm going to talk about, and also a magnet, just less than a week old. You can be the first in the country to have this in your school district. And I have no relationships to disclose. So today we are going to talk about the resources that we developed as part of the Wisconsin Improving School Health Services Project, or WISHES, because everybody needs a good acronym. Well, hopefully this will prompt some ideas on your part on how you could use these resources in your own community. They're available right now on the web. And then talk about what we found out in our pilot testing of these resources. It's a five-year project that started in 2011, and it's funded through the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program, which is it was funded by one of the Blue Cross Blue Shield conversions that that have happened across the country, in this case in Wisconsin. The project had two main goals. The first was to develop a school health services assessment tool. There were a few models out there on really what was happening in school health services. But there were none in Wisconsin, so we had to develop that first. And then secondly, we implemented that across the state. We asked school districts to complete the assessment, and from that information, we created resources, templates, and education materials to fill in some of the gaps that were less strong in Wisconsin. So this is a snapshot of the assessment tool itself. The assessment tool is online. I'll show you where you can get it. It has 100 questions in it. A couple of really neat things about this. So one, it is an assessment tool. It will tell you kind of where you are. But if you'll notice the little icons next to the question, if you click on, if you click on the schoolhouse, it will get you to the, So each question, see, Teresa would just move through this, but I want to make sure to get it right. So each question contains a link to the standard that corresponded to the question. So this question is around the provision of emergency nursing services. If you click on the schoolhouse, it will take you to the state statute that references that. The little notepad right here is links to resources if they are available. So for example, if a district indicated they did not have a pandemic flu plan but were interested in initiating one, they could click on the notebook tab and the link would take them to that sample plan. So it really goes beyond a simple assessment. It's also sort of a teaching tool. We have found that this is really helpful. So we use this as a statewide assessment, but we've also heard from a lot of districts that they've used it internally as a baseline information or to train a new school nurse as they come in. So some background on what we found. In terms of strengths, we found that a high proportion of, oh, let me just share who responded. So we have 424 districts in the state. 117 of them responded, so about a 27% response rate. Some might say that's good, some might say it's not. When you hear how long it took people to complete it, we think it's very positive. It took over 5 hours for completion of the assessment. We heard anecdotally many schools, they had the administrator completed and then the school nurse completed and then they met, which was really the idea to have that conversation about what needed to happen. So what we found was that a significant proportion of those who responded said that the RN was involved with the IEPs, the individualized education plans. There was also a high proportion of school districts that had an appropriate number of staff in each school building who were trained in CPR and the use of AEDs. There was AEDs in over 90% of the schools who responded, or the districts, we surveyed districts. And 77% of the nurses in the responding districts had a Bachelor of Science in Nursing or a Master's degree, which is the recommendation from the National Association of School Nurses. And then finally, over 75% of schools had a policy on asthmatic inhaler self-carry and allowed the students to self-carry and administer metered dose inhaler or dry powder inhaler. Prior to this session, we were kind of talking about the asset-based approach, which you're going to hear about next. And unfortunately, we're doing both sides. So we also looked at opportunities for improvement and found that although 75% of the reporting districts indicated they had a policy and a protocol manual for emergency nursing services, only 59% of the districts 59% of the districts reported not having a policy and protocol manual for emergency nursing services provided after school or before school. So during school, did pretty well. Before and after, field trips, sporting events, the staffing varies, the number of staff varies, so that was definitely a challenge. 48% of reporting districts indicated they don't have a policy and procedure regarding medication errors. And although it's not required by state statute, it would be considered best practice to have a policy and a process to track and evaluate medication errors. And then if you dig a little bit deeper, of the districts that indicated they do have a policy for medication errors, only 35% make any changes to the policy based on errors that occur. So basic quality improvement systems is an opportunity for improvement. Finally, 52% of the districts had no manual to refer to when performing skilled nursing procedures in a school setting. So based on those and more results, we developed a set of resources. The first set was developed in 2013. Just want to point out on the you can see the website address, www.wishesproject.org. You can go there now if you'd like. It's open, no passwords, anything. On the left, you can see the assessment tool, and you are welcome to go in there. We first developed two sets of resources. One is on sample policies and procedures, and the second is school nursing procedures. The sample policies and procedures that were developed include emergency nursing services. This is a required policy per state statute. Medication administration, also required by the state. And concussion management, which is not currently required by law, but it's a pretty hot topic. So the policies and procedures are longer than some districts' current policies and procedures, but that's because we wanted to include the mandatory and the best practices. So the idea was a district could review the policies and procedures and compare their current policies and procedures and determine what they could begin to incorporate. So we wanted to give all the possible options so that they could make the best and most well-informed decision for the district. We also created a food allergy management best practice guideline. The guidelines outline the steps that schools need to take to provide a safer environment for students and staff with anaphylaxis allergies. For most of the guidelines, they do not identify a specific staff person that is responsible. And the intent of that was to educate school staff that it's everyone's job to implement these strategies and practices, not just the school nurse, because you can't guarantee an anaphylactic reaction is going to happen when you're standing next to the school nurse, so everybody needs to know. And that for those schools that do not have a school nurse, they are still required to implement some of these practices. So that's one set, the policies and procedures. This is the school nurse procedures part of the site. When you click on an icon, there's one of the icons, it brings you to this page with a list of all the available procedures to review. when we click on tracheostomy suctioning clean technique, it takes us to the procedures page. Note the large yellow-orange box at the top of the page. The information contained in that box will be found at the top of every page for this procedure. For example, in the supplies tab or the resources or the references tab. The information contained in that box is important information that we want everyone to review prior to doing a procedure. When the user scrolls down the page, they're able to see more of the procedure, and the entire procedure is seen on that page. When the user clicks on the download button, it provides them with a Word document of the entire procedure, including supplies, resources, and references. This form can be edited. It's in a Word document so that you could include specific student orders. The nurse can print it off and use it as the procedure sheet for the particular student. There are videos on the site that accompany 9 procedures. When the user clicks on the video, it takes them to an embedded video that demonstrates the entire procedure. And the majority of procedures are being performed on an actual student, an actual child. So we launched those in fall of 2013. We did so with 15 pilot sites across the state. Prior to soliciting requests to participate in the pilot, we developed criteria for the selected districts to ensure we had a diverse group of school districts. We looked at reduced lunch status. We didn't want all the sites having a high proportion. We wanted a mix of proportions of students with school lunch status. We looked at RN full-time equivalent ranges. We looked at school nurse employment employer. So whether they were employed by the district or by an outside agency. We looked at racially and ethnically diverse districts. We looked at different enrollment ranges. So we had rural and urban schools and suburban schools represented. And then we also looked at school nurse experience. And we wanted a variety of experience level there. So we asked these pilot sites to, and the pilot sites are paid. We asked the sites to pilot 3 of the 5 resources that we just talked about. They provided baseline information, and then we conducted a follow-up survey at 11 months, so May of this year, and then we'll do, and we also, Teresa did a site visit at about the same time, and we'll do a follow-up next spring as well. So they will have been implementing those for 2 years. I'll talk shortly about 2 new resources that were developed, and those pilot sites will choose one of those 2 new resources this fall, or they have chosen, and then we'll do the same thing. We've collected baseline information and we'll do follow-up in the spring. Finally, the final portion of our evaluation is doing a sustainability survey about a year from now that looks at all the resources that were shared and the likelihood of them being sustained after the technical support and the availability of the technical support, really. The tools will remain online. So what did we find out? We found out that the concussion policy has been implemented by 4 of the 15 districts. The medication administration has been, policy and procedure has been implemented by 3 and emergency nursing services by 1. We found out anecdotally or through the qualitative part of the evaluation that a number of districts were making changes that don't necessarily require specific, have to go through the school district board for approval. So for example, they're implementing medication error recording and review. Didn't need to go through the school board, but they're doing it anyway. They also found as an extra benefit that simply by reviewing those best practice policies and procedures with the school nurse reviewing those with school administration or people services directors or others in the district, there was an increased awareness of what was required. And then finally, sort of an informal dissemination network has emerged that the pilot sites are sharing information about the resources with their neighbors. We've disseminated at statewide conferences, we've sent direct emails, we've gone through the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses. So you know, folks have them available, but sometimes it's, you know, it's talking to your neighbor and saying, have you tried this, is the most effective mechanism. There were also some barriers that we found. The most frequently cited barrier was that the sample policies and procedures were too long and detailed. I opened it up, I was completely overwhelmed, kind of was some of the comments. And if you recall, we kind of, sort of two sides of the same coin, we designed it that way so that communities would have the option to choose. It had the downside effect of overwhelming districts. As with any workforce issue, staffing is slim, and so there was often not enough time for, usually the school nurse was the lead in the district, for them to dedicate to the project. It affected relationships and building relationships. And then another barrier was a lack of administrator support. Concerned with writing things down, you're a public entity, you're accountable, you're mandated for 101 things, and now you're going to add one more thing that you said you would do, and that somebody might come back and say, how come you didn't do this? So it was, it's kind of that the challenge of being in a school district, at least in Wisconsin right now. And then we had two school nurses retire in the pilot sites, retire or resign, and we replaced those districts, so we're still back up to 15. So we did develop a second set of resources. One is injury and illness protocols, and the other is a training for unlicensed assistive personnel in serving students with special needs. So the injury and illness protocols are meant to serve as a basic injury and illness management and are intended to be used by staff who do not have medical or nursing training, particularly when a nurse or other medical professional is not available. It says we have developed, Teresa developed 58 protocols ranging from asthma to vomiting. The protocols are in algorithm form, and the protocols were adapted from work done in Ohio by the Ohio Department of Public Safety's Emergency Guidelines for Schools, third edition. And the protocols can be found online and in a downloadable form. So the entire document is what you see on the right-hand side. It's basically decision trees for every single one of the protocols. So it's pretty easy to navigate. The training for unlicensed assistive personnel focuses on the care of the student with special health care needs, and it covers topics such as hand hygiene, oral care, feeding, transfers, and diapering. The intent of the training is to provide unlicensed staff with the basic knowledge required to care for students who require these interventions while at school. The training incorporates the themes of compassion, empathy, patience, understanding, and self-care. So it really goes beyond the checklist, do A, B, and C, and it really approaches the child as a whole person, and it approaches the child very respectfully. The online training also has a skills checkoff sheet that the person taking the training can print off at the completion of the training, and then they can go, depending on their particular school district, they can go with the appropriate supervising person and demonstrate their knowledge. So they gain the knowledge online, but then they work with someone in the school to sort of complete and demonstrate their training. Just as an aside note, Teresa, who's supposed to be here, is the person in the bottom picture on the left-hand side. I don't think she set out to be a star, but sometimes you have to do the hard stuff.
Can I have a question?
Yes, we
can. Can I ask a question?
One. Go ahead.
Yes. Are the school nurses in Wisconsin the members of WEAC? That's the first question. In addition to that, did you work with WEAC on this project, or were they involved at all on this project?
I do not know if they are members of WEAC. That's a great question. Were they involved? We have an advisory group that does include, I don't think we had WEAC. We had the Wisconsin Education Association Trust, which is affiliated with WEAC.
That's their operation.
And they are on the advisory committee, yes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, so we had a core group of partners who did, from the Division of Public Health, Department of Public Instruction, the Medical College, Association of School Nurses, but then we also had a broader group that included a number of advocates, WEA's School Trust, trying to think of groups who are advocates for children with special health care needs, and others.
I thought that would be really clever and cost-effective way to develop an assessment. And I was wondering, like what was the reaction of the schools having done the assessment? Did you see like any initial changes before you implemented the
before the resources? So the question is, did we see any changes in school districts simply upon using the assessment?
Did you also give them the results?
We did, and that was a direct result. We gave the participating school districts their results, and that was actually a direct result of our advisory committee. Years ago, we presented, here's the assessment that we want to do, and somebody said, gosh, it'd be really nice if they could have their results, and so we did. We did provide those results. We heard more anecdotally, because we didn't follow up with all 117. We did have an evaluation after they took it to tell us what could be improved in the assessment tool, because it was the first time we were doing it. So they did give us some feedback. There wasn't a lot of it on how to improve the tool. Anecdotally, we heard that it was it's a really helpful tool, as I said, for someone coming in new as a new school nurse and kind of understanding what all the responsibilities are.